The rules of business and society have changed, and Mish Kondureya stands at the forefront of this change, championing the innovation ecosystem at the heart of Cambridge. Discover what you can do with the law of tomorrow, today, at mishkon.com.
Welcome to the Cambridge Tech Podcast, talking all things technology from the heart of the UK's tech capital. Here are your hosts, Faye Holland and James Parton.
Hi, I'm James.
And I'm Faye. I'm going to jump straight into the news this week with two exciting funding updates. First is news that Californian growth stage venture firm March Capital has led a $40 million Series B funding round in Cambridge AI technology company Luminance. Off the back of 5x annual recurring revenue growth in the last 2 years, the funding will be used to propel Luminance's global growth plans and expand its US footprint as it continues to drive innovation in the legal AI market. Santa Monica-based March Capital was joined in the Series B round by National Grid Partners and other existing investors, including Slaughter & May. Luminance's specialist legal large language model automates the generation, negotiation, and analysis of contracts and other legal documents. Also raising early stage funding is a Cambridge startup, SparkCell, who has raised $3.2 million and plans to launch a Series A in the coming months to upscale production and capacity and accelerate commercialization. Founded in 2022 by University of Cambridge scientists Dr. Benjamin Jogue and Professor Silva Vignolini, SparkCell has discovered ways to replicate vibrant colours in nature using fully plant-based cellulose, a renewable, biodegradable resource that can be extracted from waste streams. The Circular Innovation Fund, which is a global venture capital fund jointly managed by Demeter and Cycle Capital with L'Oreal as an anchor investor, have participated in the seed funding round alongside others, including SpaceX backer Future Communities Capital, PDS Ventures, Catapult, Joyance Partners, and Snowcap VC. SparkCell has already engaged in product innovation and partnerships with blue chip companies across different industries, including leading car manufacturers, world-leading high-end fashion brands, and cosmetic goods manufacturers. So we're super excited personally to see this development for Benjamin and the team. So well done to both companies.
So, Faith, today's episode is coverage from an event you attended a week ago. What I say to you, Puntastic. Tell us a little bit more.
So, yes, I work quite closely with Cambridge Science Centre. And when I saw this event come up, I thought it would be a good one to cover. So it's a creation of Andrew Farrer, who works at the Science Centre. And it was just, it was such a fun night. So I think you're going to find it's quite a diversion from the regular content that we put on the podcast. But I think it's a really nice take on STEM with some pretty chatty people.
That implies that we don't have fun then on the podcast if it's a diversion.
Well, let people judge that themselves, James, should we?
Okay, well, let's run through them then. So James Harkin, who is a head researcher and script editor for the BBC TV show QI, as well as one quarter of the hit podcast No Such Thing as a Fish, which is now closing in on 500 million downloads in its 10-year history.
Crikey, we've got a bit catching up there to do. In our 1.5-year-ish history, so we're all right. We've got time yet. Also, Jason Mellard, CEO and co-founder of Start Codon, a UK-based accelerator that identifies and supports the most disruptive life science, biotech and healthcare founders, and who is well known on the Cambridge scene.
Yep, and then Holly Gabrielle, who is a YouTuber and content creator with 440,000 viewers. Holly is Cambridge alumni, having studied biological natural sciences for 3 years, and then went on to complete a master's degree in cancer biology at UCL. Holly also has two businesses, an online tutoring business, Holly Gemma, and an online apparel business, Nana.
Greg Futt was also there. He's an award-winning science journalist, producer and presenter who has a weekly BBC Radio 4 show and podcast called Sliced Bread. Greg regularly pops up on TV chatting about science. He's also hosted multiple TV series, made ambitious interactive live shows for families and toured with science shows throughout the UK.
Then we had Catherine Chapman, who's the director of the Science and Entrepreneurship at Babyham Research Campus. And in May, moves on to take on a new role of Executive Director of Innovate Cambridge. Catherine has an extensive research career working within and alongside all the main research bodies and various universities, and has more than 50 research papers to her name. She also is the co-founder of the University of Cambridge's Connect Health Tech Initiative and a real friend of the show.
That's it. And finally, Isaac Newton, the physicist and mathematician, most famous for his theory of gravity based on his three laws of motion. He also discovered that white light was made up of a rainbow of colours, laying the foundation for modern physical optics. In mathematics, he is the original discoverer of infinitesimal calculus. Couldn't get my teeth in with that one. His third book, Mathematical Principles of Natural Philosophy, has been called one of the most important single works in the history of modern science.
So is this just Google clickbait, or have you actually interviewed Isaac Newton this week?
No, Isaac Newton was actually there. I mean, who am I to argue? He looked like Isaac Newton. He spoke as I imagine Isaac Newton would look like. So you're just going to have to tune in to see what he said. So you're going to hear from all of the six of them throughout the recording. You won't know who's speaking some of the time, so you'll just have to try and work that out yourself. But if it's any consolation, I was sitting up in the gods with the AV team looking at a brick wall, so I didn't see any of them either.
But you're sure it's Isaac Newton?
Absolutely. So we're in the Junction in Cambridge, a venue known for fresh thinking and ideas and alternative performances. There's an audience of around 150 people looking at a stage set up in a format pretty similar to most game shows that you'd watch. On either side is a panel of three people, and Andrew Farris starts by introducing the teams.
Hello, everyone. Good evening. Welcome to Would I Sigh to You, the relevant but irreverent science-based panel show. My name is Andrew. I will be the host for this evening. And tonight we have our two teams who are going to face off in classic panel show style. We have fascinating facts, bizarre research, mysterious objects, and maybe some tall or potentially not so tall tales. So we'll dive straight into it and welcome our team. So on the red team, we have one quarter of hit podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish, and head script editor for BBC TV's QI. It's James Harkin. It's the scientist, entrepreneur, and CEO of business accelerator Start Codon. We've got Jason Mellard. And YouTube sensation and science content creator, it's Holly Gabrielle. And on the green team, sadly, we were unable to get Isabel Thomas in. She's ill, so we've got a wonderful substitute. We have the award-winning science communicator and host of BBC Radio 4 Sliced Bread. It's only Greg Futt. Director of Science and Entrepreneurship at the Babyham Research Campus, Catherine Chapman. And finally, what can I say? We were frankly gobsmacked he said yes. It's the man, the polymath, the legend. It's Sir Isaac Newton. Okay, teams, this game is made up of a number of rounds, each one consisting of a series of questions, fairly standard stuff. You'll get points for getting a correct answer, good start, providing some interesting extra information, asking an intriguing question, and sharing a fascinating anecdote. And said anecdote doesn't necessarily have to be related. You might get bonus points for the more tenuous your segue. Okay? So we have buzzers. I think we should do some buzzer testing. So, Jason, can you give us the red team buzzer, please?
Oh wow!
very dramatic.
I feel like the one who wants to be a millionaire.
Yeah, I do.
We are not paying.
I'm phoning a friend for
other questions.
No money involved. We're not paying you. I'm sorry. Okay. Catherine, would you like to give us a green team buzzer, please? Okay, right. Yeah,
sorry, can I just say, I think we got the bum deal on the buzzers. It's like I already know I'm going to get it wrong before I even say it.
It's the noise you get after a bad joke.
We'll be hearing a lot of that tonight.
On that note, round one. So round one, quick fire question. So this will be on those buzzers, whether you like them or not. Sorry, James. This is based on primary school science, and we're going to follow the actual official marking schemes. So let's see how this goes. Question the first. What do we call electrical energy that comes from sources such as the sun, wind, or waves?
Woke.
Yes. Is it renewable?
It is.
Hey,
well done. Renewable energy. Look,
I'm not just a pretty face, I told you. Not just a pretty face.
No. What number is 100 less than 19,039?
At the risk of sounding incredibly stupid, 18,000.
What was the end of that?
There was no risk.
18,930.
Oh, come on.
That is correct. That, everyone's brain just melts at that. Many single-celled organisms grow and divide into two cells. Which of the seven life processes is this an example of?
Reproduction.
Correct. Yes. Bonus points. Anyone can name any of the other?
Any of the seven others?
Any of the seven
others.
Movement.
Growth.
Nice. Someone's taking this seriously. Right. Yes. Movement. Growth. Brilliant. Yeah. Respiration. Sensitivity. Excretion. God, we didn't get into that one. And nutrition.
It was Mrs. Nerg.
Mrs. Nerg. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does anyone remember Mrs. Nerg? Isaac?
Who's that?
No.
Not my teacher.
Yeah. Not your teacher. No, it's spelled out. Yeah.
Is that a mnemonic? Wow.
There you go.
Wait, do we get points for him saying mnemonic? No, is that...
I am not in charge of points.
Is this what kids do at primary school now?
Yeah.
God, we used to just play with plasticine all day. And
you can
eat
tell.
Plasticine for the rest of the day.
Right, okay. I think that's enough of that. We will move on to our next round, which is our Would I Lie to You round. So, a member of our panelists is going to read out a statement which may be true or may be a lie. They don't know which one they are getting. The opposing team can then ask questions before deciding if the story is truth or deceit. And then we'll find out, really, whether it's fact or fiction. So, Catherine, you'd like to pick up the card in front of you, read it out.
My colleague and I knocked and waited at the door of number 10 Downing Street until a paparazzi told us we were supposed to walk straight in.
Yeah, so Catherine waited outside 10 Downing Street, knocked on the door before the paparazzi informed them that you meant to walk straight in.
Mm.
Any questions?
I think there is a thing about you can't open the door from the outside, can you, in 10 Downing Street? You can only open it from the inside. I think there's no doorknob on there. I'm just trying to get points at this stage.
But if you're meant to walk straight in, Catherine, presumably you can open it from the outside.
I would argue you cannot open it from the outside.
Right.
That's a great argument. Okay, well, let's ask some questions. Why were you in Downing Street? Were you Prime Minister? There's been a lot in the last few years, so I might have forgotten one.
So it's quite an interesting story. I went to get toilet paper.
Went to get what?
Toilet paper.
Toilet paper.
Were you caught short? Piccadilly Circus?
Okay.
I know the bills can be a bit bad, but I mean, to use them as toilet paper seems a bit extreme. Was it real toilet paper or is that like a euphemism?
No, it was real toilet paper, but that was the secondary reason for going to 10 Downing
Street. Okay. Did you steal some toilet paper as a memento? Was that the idea?
Yes.
Okay, that does ring true. But I think when I was asking you why you were in 10 Downing Street, I was more going for the primary reason.
That should have been slightly clearer.
Sorry, I do apologise.
Not the number two reason. Well.
So this was to go and talk to the then Prime Minister about animals in research.
Did you make any progress on the situation with animals in research? I mean, what were you there to discuss specifically?
To look at alternatives for animals in research, stem cells and things,
Okay. Right. What else can we ask? Something that will get us. So when you go to 10 Downing Street, whenever I've been past, it's hard to actually get onto the street because there's loads of police and stuff like that. Not that I've tried to get on the street, but I imagine if you tried, it would be quite difficult. So did you not have someone to take you up to the door?
It was pre-planned. Yeah, we didn't just sort of.
No, yeah. Call it. I mean, someone take you as far as the door and then say, "You're on your own"?
They leave you partway along down.
So. Oh. Okay, we're going to make a call on this. What do you guys think?
I think it's a lie.
You think it's a lie?
I don't know. I think it might be a lie, but I'm not sure.
I thought it was a lie until with the toilet paper. And I was thinking, that's just too bizarre to make up.
So can I just ask one more question? Do you still have the toilet paper?
No.
Okay. That hasn't changed my mind. For me, I think lie because, again, I think there is a thing about not being able to open the door. Okay. I don't know.
Are we going
the captain has to go with it.
Okay, we're going with lie.
We're going with lie. Catherine, was it truth or was it lie?
It was the truth.
Catherine did require the paparazzi to help her get into 10 Downing Street, and you can open the door from the outside. Fantastic. Okay. It's Holly.
Yeah. It's me. Okay. I made a video message explaining my first lectures at university for my family. I accidentally made it public, and this is how I basically got started making content.
So there we go. Holly was recording a... this is a kind of moving picture message. So a moving picture message for her family about what she was doing at university here in Cambridge. Hmm. She accidentally put it somewhere where anyone in the world could watch it. And then it must have gone well, because then she kept doing it for a long time.
That's true. That's a good job, is it?
How dare you?
This coming from a man who went to places of disrepute for a living.
Yeah. Well, very much a job. Yes.
So what was your intention? How were you trying to send it to your family?
So it was a big file. I was just like waffling for 10 minutes and you can't really send that easily. So I basically uploaded it to YouTube and there's like different buttons. You can make it public. You can schedule it. You can make it unlisted, which is where you give someone else a link so they can watch the video. I was supposed to do that, but I accidentally scheduled it. And the next day, it was just live on YouTube instead of sending it.
You don't understand the word.
What was the lecture on?
The lecture was my first year cells lecture. So I was just explaining everything to them. I didn't have the guts to like post videos. I knew I wanted to do it, but I just couldn't post it on YouTube to like an audience. I couldn't do that. So I was just like, I'll send a video to my parents. I'll film with my iPhone 5S. And like,
it's... Right, Isaac.
I mean, sorry, iPhones.
It's an Apple product.
Yeah.
Now I'm beginning to understand, right, yeah.
Is it still public?
No. I took that one down and then the video that did blow up my channel was like moving into Cambridge because I was documenting things here and there, filming myself, but I didn't have the guts to put that online, as I said.
So how many views did you have before you realised it was...
How many views did I have? Mm. So I noticed it went live when like notifications kept coming up on my phone from YouTube being like, people commented on this video. And I was like, what's going on? And it got like 1,000 views in 24 hours. And then it didn't get to like very high. It got to like 10,000 in a week. But I was like, 10,000 is still too many people.
This was the first video you'd ever put on your channel?
Yeah, this was the first video.
I thought it was true. You're a very good liar if it's not.
Mm. Ask people questions.
It's a lot of views. It's a lot of views for the first video on a channel.
Yeah.
10,000 in a week.
Is it? Do we know? We heard.
Twenty-eight. Not so impressive now, is it?
I think it's because it had Cambridge in the title, and at that time, like Cambridge wasn't. It was a buzzword on YouTube. The only person before me was Jake Wright, the Comsky. And I wanted to be the female version. And yeah, it had Cambridge in the title. Jake Wright was already very established. And I was like a new kid on the block, this next vlogger, so to be. And yeah, I think the Cambridge just blew up.
I'd be tempted to say true.
Okay.
But you don't want us to get it right.
Oh, does she?
Sir Newton?
Well, genuinely, I have no idea what she's talking about. but I can look at her face when she's saying it, can't I? Mm-hmm. That doesn't help either. I think it's a lie.
I think the number of views and the fact that we've had three...
Oh, you're going for stats.
I'm going for stats.
Each one's technically a mutually...
Independent.
So let's toss a coin then. Lie.
Okay, right. In which case, Holly, can you reveal, is this true or is it a lie?
It is a lie.
Oh, wow, well done.
I shouldn't have said 10,000.
It was the iPhone 5S that got me.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
I filmed with my iPhone 5S and I was documenting everything, but I did have the guts to put it online.
Well done.
When I was at uni, I think the best thing I could do on my phone was play Snake.
It's still the best thing you can do with a phone.
True.
At least you had a phone.
All right. That brings us to the end of our Would I Lie to You round. We'll move on now to our missing words round. We have headlines from the scientific journal Nature. This is one of the most prestigious science journals in the world. We've taken it from the News in Focus and News in View, so don't worry, we're not trying to figure out the actual academic titles, which are a little bit dry. So, we are going to have a series of titles with a word taken out. Panelists, I want you to try your best to figure out what word might have been in that headline. So, can we have our first headline, please? Bioluminescence. Yes?
Just because it sounds good, bioluminescent Biden.
Biden. No. Oh. But he is, yeah, he's getting paler.
I was going to say, is it weed?
Weed.
You light up as you get lit.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that it would sell.
It's how woke of you. No, not weed. Oh. Closer than Biden, though. Final guess.
Bioluminescent. Cheeseburgers.
Oh, I think they're already.
Are we close with food? Are you allowed to start giving us clues?
Weed was closer than food, but we're looking at that kind of. We're not.
Okay.
Not Biden.
You said that weed was closer than food.
Weed is closer than food. Bioluminescence. So this thing has to be alive because it's bioluminescing. It's not just something that's luminescence.
Babies. Hit the market for the first time.
I'm not dignifying that with a response, Greg. I think we can accept some kind of plant.
Corn.
Is it aquatic?
It's not aquatic.
Hemp, corn.
I'm going to give you it for plant. It is bioluminescent house plants. This is.
So I was right.
Yeah. Well.
They're actually petunias. They're petunias. They've been, they've had genes from fireflies added to them to give them a continuous green glow. You can get one for the reasonable price of $29. And it's a big deal because it actually, we've put
bioluminescent into things that didn't naturally bioluminesce quite a lot over the years, but this is the first time where it's bright enough to be seen by the naked eye. So there we go. Okay, our next headline, please. AI model learnt language by seeing the world like a blank.
Baby?
Baby. It is baby. Yeah. Yes. Well done, yeah. So this was, an AI model, a computer, Isaac, a thinking machine.
I know a computer, it's a person.
No.
It's a computer.
Well, we've taken the person out of the computer situation. The computer can do it by itself now. So
now you're just talking gibberish.
It's been a long 300 years. Yeah. But yes, this is Sam, who had a head cam for 61 hours. From the age of 6 months to 2 years, about an hour per week. They didn't give the AI model any prior information. They just gave it 250,000 words and then let it try to match
up. I feel like if we did this with my daughter, it would just be Baby Shark nonstop.
It was more accurate at picking out specific things like shark or dog as opposed to toy, because obviously sharks, dogs look like they're set things, even if they have lots of variation between a stuffed version and a cartoon version and a real thing, but toy is too ambiguous for it, which is how humans are.
Like babies or like, say, 1 year old or 18 months old can all tell the difference between a cat and a dog. Like, give them any cat, any dog, they don't really look like each other. Different dogs are all different, but they know what a cat is and know what a dog is. But AI finds that really difficult because they're just fluffy, furry things.
I find it difficult. Fluffy, annoying, furry thing. Yeah. No, so it would get the identification if you showed it an image after it had learnt from Sam. It would get the image correct 62% of the time, which is actually equivalent to a lot of other AI models. As I said, they only had 250,000 reference points from Sam, which compared to 400 million that most AI is trained on, it's actually pretty much equivalent, really.
Wow.
There's a lot less data to learn more like a human. And an interesting sort of biological side of it was that it indicates that there's no special mechanisms inside the human brain that allow for language learning. It can be done just by something sort of iterating. So there's been a lot of putting forth that humans have something special going on to deal with language, but we don't. We can just do it. It's cool.
So we can have an army of sort of baby slaves who are training AI.
Okay, we're going to have to catch you up on a lot.
Are you thinking, Isaac, an army of bioluminescent baby slaves?
Now you're talking.
And we're not inviting him back. We're going to dive straight in with... I literally just told you, this is some questions based on what happened in the first half. Let's see if any of you were actually paying attention. Okay. Questions to this team, the green team.
Okay.
What kind of phone did Holly have when she first started?
An iPhone 5S.
iPhone 5S, that is correct. Well done. Paying attention. Jason wanted to make a certain something bioluminescent.
Weed.
Well, that was...
Isaac, I see you.
Yes, very quick. Okay, and... what did James call wind and solar energy? What did he refer to it as?
Yeah.
Shh, audience.
Well done.
To be honest, that was much better delivery than I did.
I'm amazed. Frankly, flabbergasted you got that. Well done, yes. Point to audience, I think, for woke. And excellent repetition skills, Greg. Okay, this team. What memento did Catherine take from 10 Downing Street?
Toilet paper.
Toilet paper. Excellent. Well done. Okay, and we come to our final round. Our final round. This is a buzzer round. I've got a series of questions. Buzz in if you think you know the answer. What is the perimeter of a circle called?
Circumference.
Yes. We got there eventually. Humans and chimpanzees share roughly how much DNA?
98%.
Oh, very well done. Yes.
I don't know how I know that, but there you go.
I was worried about what you were going to ask. But yes, 98% of the human genome is the same as the chimpanzee genome. It's just 2% that will make all of those differences. Can you set fire to a diamond?
Personally, no. Otherwise, my wife would get very upset if I get her engagement ring off her. It would be a weird question to ask if the answer was no, so I'm going to say yes.
That is correct. You can, yes. It is just...
Michael Faraday, never met him, he did that.
He set fire to a diamond?
With Humphrey Davy, and Michael Faraday went to Italy, where they had a tremendously large lens where they could concentrate the sun's rays onto a diamond, which they'd borrowed, which they then set fire to. And it turned into black carbon.
It turned to black, yeah. Because diamonds are just carbon in a form, so if you can get it hot enough, 900 degrees centigrade, it will ignite and burn like anything else made of carbon. Mm-hmm. There we go. Talking of burning, why does the sun not run out of oxygen as it burns?
It doesn't use oxygen to burn.
What does it do, Greg?
Hydrogen into helium.
Correct, yes. You know what that's called? That process of...
Fusion.
Fusion?
Yes, nuclear fusion.
Mitosis.
Very good, nuclear fusion. Yes, we don't need oxygen to burn in our sun. Is the heart strong enough to pump blood up your legs against gravity?
No.
Correct. But if that's true, how on earth do we get the blood back up to the rest of us?
Just us moving around and valves.
Yes. So the muscles in our legs help push the blood back up, and we have a set of valves in our veins to make sure the blood doesn't flow back the wrong way. But it's why sort of long flights, you should wear the tight socks, because you're not moving those leg muscles, you're not helping your heart push the blood up, so you constrict everything to help the blood come back up. Okay. How many more vertebrae in a giraffe neck compared to a...
None.
None is the correct answer. Have you checked personally?
Yes.
Of course you have.
So how... My day dissection was nothing.
Oh, okay. So how many? Do you know?
Seven.
Seven. Yes. All mammals have seven vertebrae in the neck, no matter how long the neck is. There are obviously some exceptions. Sloths, because of course, between 5 and 9, and then randomly manatees, who have 6. Huh. There you go. What is the densest bone in the human body?
The ones in the ears.
It is in the ear, yes.
Is it the malus?
Not the malus.
Oh.
The hammer?
No.
That's the malus. Is that what
I'm saying? Oh, it's
Latin.
Yeah. Stapes?
No.
Is it like the femur?
Not the femur, no. It's skull related.
Cochlear?
Not the cochlea. No, I don't think that's a bone. Is it?
Is that a problem?
Well, see the heart cartilage or something? Tony?
I'll tell you, it is the petrous bone, which is on the inside of our skulls. It's incredibly dense and very useful if you're trying to get DNA out of ancient things. And because it's so dense, the DNA that is inside is preserved better than in other parts of the bones. So if you can get the petrous bone out of an ancient sample, you've got a good chance of getting its DNA back.
Wow.
Okay. What are natural satellites colloquially known as?
Moons.
Correct. You panicked about that for a second, didn't you? That's it. It is moons. And that brings us to the end of the round, and in fact, to the end of the show. A round of applause for our volunteers. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Final round of applause for our teams, Holly, Jason, and James. Isaac, Catherine, and Greg. And of course, thank you to all of you. Thank you. Good night. We'll see you later. Science is awesome. Woo!
Well, that really was a test of all things STEM, wasn't it? And mostly science, but I guess you'd expect that from the organisers, and a single point in it.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. Do let us know what you think. As I said at the beginning, it is quite different, but we hope you enjoyed it. Hats off to Andrew Farrer as MC and organiser, and also to Cambridge Science Centre for coming up with a great way of engaging with a broader community on the subject of STEM. And if you're around in Cambridge next year and they run it again, I would definitely recommend that you go because it was really funny.
Fabulous. Well, that's it for this week. Tune in next week when we talk to Tom Collins from Calium Health.
Today's show was produced by Carl Homer of Cambridge TV and supported by our media partner, Business Weekly. The Cambridge Tech Podcast is available on all major podcast platforms and on cambridgetechpodcast.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please give it a 5-star review. It will really help others discover the show.